with this particular recital, and what I do with most of my recitals now, is there's a lot of recitation. So, for instance, the first half of the program is in French. So all of the poetry that we do, the first set of songs are by Poulenc, and the poems are by Ronsard. So what we do is we get up and we recite the poems. We recite them in translation. Both my pianist, Warren Jones, and I recite them in translation so that the audience has a chance to hear the poetry and then experience the song, rather than sit and read along a translation while they're listening to the song, which doesn't really presuppose that they're going to hear the song. They're basically just counting the lines. That's not an assumption. That's what I would do.
Right.
You know, it's just natural that when you're looking at the translation, your mind is occupied with something else. So what we do is we introduce the songs in that way. The songs that are more lyrics than poetry, for instance, by Jacques Brel and Léo Ferré, who are two wonderful song composers of their day, both roughly analogous. Both of them started writing in the 50s. Ferré lived a lot longer than Brel did, but they composed and performed their entire lives. Those songs, we do a recitation of those songs. And they're just fantastic lyrics. And there's something really wonderful about the audience having the opportunity to experience text away from music, which is the way the composer experiences it. I think if you want to compare it to what Craig Terry and I do in the Kate Smith Show, I think that show kind of solidified for me the necessity of an active audience and an audience that is immersed in the text as much as we are.
All by myself at twilight, watching the day depart, and in the fading twilight, happiness fills my heart. When the moon comes over the mountain, every beam bings
a... Well, you seem to create a dialogue between yourself and the audience in a way.
That's the way it should always be. You know, it's easier to do that when you are doing music in the vernacular. Whenever you're singing in the language of your audience, there always is going to be a greater sense of intimacy and connection. And when it comes to popular song, of course, it's even greater than that. And I suspect that the Noel Coward songs that we do at Spivey will be received in that way, because they're funny and they're poignant and they're in English.
In their time, these songs were considered cabaret. We never think of Poulenc as a cabaret composer.
He's a precursor to cabaret music. I mean, in the true sense of cabaret. I mean, those songs were, not only are they really kind of a precursor to cabaret, they created a domino effect with writing. There's something very colorful about Poulenc's writing, and these particular songs are rarely sung. Rarely. And I started singing them when I was in college. I had a voice teacher who was very, very into French and American composers. And she would allow me to go into her studio, and I could just rifle through her music and sing through it whenever I wanted. And I found these songs. And I was just amazed by how difficult they were, but also how pictorial they were. And just some of them are silly and wonderful, and some of them are heart-breakingly beautiful. They're a perfect foil to Ferré and Brel songs that come immediately after them in the concert. The piano writing is certainly not as difficult or as structured as Poulenc, but the flavor is all there.
So we tend to like our labels in terms of saying, well, this is cabaret and this is a classical art song. It does imply for a singer different technique, doesn't it?
I don't think it implies different technique. I think it implies different style. The technique is always the same. You know, I sing everything from Handel to Wagner, and my technique never changes. I sing them differently, but the technique is always the same. And technique is just singing, it's just supported singing, meaning singing that's on the breath of a clear vowel for me. That's technique right there.
I just remembered, I heard an interview you did where you were talking about how you get so into that particular character and acting that your body wants to take you in a direction of a huddled old woman, and your brain's reminding you that you have to be able to sing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I thought that was so interesting that you have to sort of check yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Does that sort of thing come into play with these songs?
Sure. Of course it does. I mean, I could fall into a plain old belting chest voice very easily and happily. and I think that with a program like this, you have to really kind of walk a balance, you know, walk a tightrope a little bit. But the most important thing, no matter what you do, no matter what style I have to employ at any given time, I have to think about the text first. I have to think about what I'm saying, because that's what the composer was doing. And I say this to young singers all the time. You know, when you look at music, what is the first thing you look at? And it has to be the text, because that's what the composer did. Affects absolutely everything. And if we're really communicating something true, the audience senses it immediately. Immediately. If they know you are really there with them and you're really sitting in the middle of that text, they get it. And that's why I really love doing these recitations, because it gives the audience a chance to have a moment away from the music to really hear it, to really experience the poem. One of the first times I ever did this was I was curating a recital for the students at Tanglewood, and we were doing a program of art songs that were written on the poetry of Charles Baudelaire. And each of them were singing two songs, and each of them had a recitation before the song was being performed. And one of them was doing the song Les Morts des Amants, you know, the death of the children. And it was a very, very poignant, frightening poem. And I had a friend who was sitting next to the great American soprano, Phyllis Curtin. She was sitting in the audience. And the recitation finished on the poem, and Phyllis turned to her seatmate and just kind of shivered and said, "Oh, how creepy." And I thought, how wonderful. She doesn't know this song, because this particular setting of the song, nobody knew. And she had no idea what she was going to hear, but she had an idea of what that poem was about before she even heard the song.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. And I think one of the things that I discovered doing the Kate Smith Show is that when audiences are really educated about something, they have an idea about something, they enjoy it more.
Absolutely. I mean,
it has to go beyond reading the program.
I mean, I come from a generation that doesn't really know Kate Smith. And
sure.
I think about everything I know from that, I know from seeing your show. It was so completely compelling, and it was a music that I hadn't felt like I needed to know even. It was,
yeah.
But the other thing that really struck me about you singing that repertoire is, and it might surprise the people who come to your show at Spivey Hall, is that you're not your typical singer approaching some of this music. And I remember at one point I thought maybe you might just knock out the back wall of the room.
Well,
and everybody's used to, you know, singers doing that stuff with microphones. Can you talk about bridging that gap, the techniques and sort of the space you have to get into mentally?
I'm very interested, because I've been told by every single one of my colleagues that I have discussed going to Spivey to perform, every single one of them who has performed this says it's the most live, wonderful space they've ever sung in. And they adore it. They just adore that space. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Live spaces are fantastically fun, because you can play a live space like a microphone, because a really live space will finish sound for you, and it's wonderful. And when you heard me sing the Kate Smith Show, you know, of course, I was in a loft. So that was kind of very different. I have a loud voice, and I try very, very hard to make it more than just loud.
Don't let our parting upset you. I'll not forget you, sweetheart. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know where. Just like you always do, till the blue skies chase the dark clouds far away. Oh, won't you
singing is a different animal right now when you're talking about popular music singing. It's a completely different animal. The technology is driving the voice now rather than the other way around. And that's what's most frightening about singing for me today. I can hear an auto-tuned mic, and it is the technology is so remarkable that it has become part of the vocal
the sound
production.
Yeah.
And with an opera singer, we work our whole lives to create something out of the natural body. And, you know, I always use the example of Pavarotti whenever I talk about a voice that just carries and spins and is beautiful and really loud. That voice, I remember singing with him and being amazed at the sound that was coming at me, but also equally amazed sitting in the back of a theater and having the sound, regardless of the volume, feel as if he was sitting right in front of me and singing. There's something about a voice that really understands how to project that's remarkable. No, we have to understand it. You know, great orators did not do it with microphones. They spoke at a podium and knew how to project their voices. And so this is becoming a lost art, which I'm determined not to let die, because it's very important. There's something very, not to say that singers who use microphones can't be intimate. Of course they can. Of course they can. But there's something about a voice that naturally projects that can be very thrilling and very visceral.
Right. Unplugged.
Exactly. That's why people, when MTV put out their Unplugged series, that's why people loved it so much, because it became an intimate thing. There wasn't any kind of technology between you and the artist. It was just you and the artist.
So looking at your career, a mezzo, you start off early in your career doing one kind of repertoire, it kind of evolves. So can you talk a little bit about that, where you're going, where you've been, and how you see your career going?
Well, I've always played my career the same way for the last 20 years. This season past now is my 20th anniversary of singing professionally. And basically, I just leave myself open to experience new things. And when I enjoy something, I try to do it again. I mean, that's basically it. I don't have any kind of real structure for the way it works. Because when you're a solo contractor, you basically, your schedule is kind of set to hopefully 3 years in advance, and you try to get things, you try to aim things in particular directions, but you really can't do that because it when you're an opera singer, you sort of go where the companies take you. The way I've been in control of my career is through things that aren't opera. And that's through my recital programs and through the Kate Smith Show, developing, working on private projects with more popular music, you know, releasing crossover discs. I've also developed a sing-along recital program called Sing America, which is something I'm very, very excited about and very proud of.
Can you tell us about that?
Sing America is an all sing-along recital. The audience sings the entire time. And it's basically presenting Tin Pan Alley music. We're talking about 20s, 30s, some a little bit earlier than that, some a little bit later than that. I present the verse of the song and one chorus on my own, and then the audience sings the choruses with me.
I bet they have a great time.
Oh, we have a blast. It is the most fun. We did this concert at Tanglewood last summer, and I did it with a group of the Tanglewood singers. And we all presented two songs and to hear 2,000 people singing Moonlight Bay and you know, Only a Bird in a Gilded Cage is really something. And what's fascinating to me is that the audience age is generally higher, but there's a lot of young people in the audience, and it's shocking to them that they know these tunes. And the reason they do is because this music is part of our cultural collective consciousness. This music has been sampled for everything from movies to television shows to advertisements for years and years and years. One of the songs that we do is I'm Looking Over a Four-Leaf Clover. That song was used by Merry Melodies 3 different times. It's really refreshing and fun, and people just, everybody sings. And I realized that I wanted to do this after I had done the Kate Smith Show a few times and invited the audience to sing with me. And whenever I did that, it became very clear that they'd wanted to sing the entire time.
Aww.
So they just were holding back. And when you invite everybody to sing along with you, it is just heaven. And slowly but surely, I'm introducing, you know, different songs that are not as well known and getting those out. And I think for me, it's all about getting as close to the audience as I possibly can. And using this kind of technique really works. And I'm just thrilled that people are interested in presenting it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We are looking forward to your show.
Oh, I can't wait. I really am looking forward to it. I'm honestly thrilled about the idea of singing in Spivey Hall. I'm really looking forward to hearing what all my colleagues have been raving about for so many years.